Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Janie Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome. It's Janie Lee Grace with the podcast Alcohol Free Life. Thank you to everyone who commented on Instagram and Facebook after the podcast last week with Millie Gooch from Sober Girl Society. And I've now interviewed Scott Pearson, the boy who drank too much as well. So I'll be bringing you that podcast soon. I just love the work these guys are doing. You know, young people who are inspiring other younger people to choose that different path. So, we'll be bringing you that. It was really interesting, though, actually. I saw a piece in Time Out magazine, which is a London magazine, last week, which seemed to suggest that millennials aren't, in fact, drinking less, despite everything we read. However, it did say that they don't seem to be as reliant on booze to get through the week. They don't necessarily feel that they need to drink every day. So I suppose that's a good thing. But it doesn't change the fact that booze is addictive. So it can kind of rise up and bite you on the bum, however great at moderating you might be, if you have that addictive voice, that is. And that's very much the theme of our podcast today. So I'll tell you more about that in a while. The Time Out piece back on that basically said that 78% of Londoners refer to themselves as drinkers. 13% are cutting down, and just 9% say they're teetotal, which is interesting. I felt sure that number must be higher, actually. It must be growing, at least. Certainly with the work that Club Soda are doing with, you know, things like the Mindful Drinking Festival and the various events that happen in London. But I don't know. Maybe London isn't representative anyway of the rest of the UK. So I'd be very interested in your experience, if you know any stats in your area and wherever you are in the world, actually. Now, I mentioned Laura just then, Laura from the online community Club Soda. She's going to be our very special guest at the next event that we're running, that I'm running with the charity, Self-Care for the Sober Curious. It's on Monday, the 29th of April. It's back at the Jago, a great funky community venue in Dalston in London. We would so love to see you there. So just type in to Eventbrite, My Yard, or Self-Care for the Sober Curious, and hopefully that link will come up. Anyways, talking about whether or not to ditch the drink and whether to moderate and how to stop drinking and what else to do, and all those questions, will life ever be the same? How can I get support? All of this is covered beautifully by today's podcast guest. I first came across Belle when I caught sight of the title of her 1 minute messages, her little mini podcast that she does called Tired of Thinking About Drinking. And I thought, wow, that's me. I'm actually tired of it. Not just tired of the over drinking itself and feeling terrible, but literally tired about thinking about it, planning how to stop, planning where to get the next one, planning whether I can stop, planning if I should moderate. You know, it just goes on and on. Belle has a book of the same name, a blog, of course, and she is a sober coach, and she has for several years now been offering her services as a sober pen pal. She's helped so many people, including, I found out when I interviewed her, Catherine Gray, who found support from Belle in the early days of her sobriety. So Belle really is something of a sober hero to many of us, but she's literally so unassuming. She wishes to remain anonymous. We'll talk about that. So there's no pick, no podcast pick this week, just a lovely artistic representation of Belle, which she supplied to me. So I felt really privileged, actually, to have been able to interview her and meet her in person, because she's just this amazing voice that that people recognise. And I'm really lucky. I think I'm one of the few people that's gotten to meet her, which is great. But the caveat to that is that we met in a cafe in central London. So I'm really sorry, but it is a bit noisy. It's not so much the chatting in the background or waiters delivering stuff. It's there's someone in the background literally banging the coffee machine or grinding the coffee. So you get a little bit of machinery noise in the background. So I do apologise for that. But I so hope it doesn't spoil your enjoyment of the interview. Hi and welcome, this is Jenny Lee Grace, and we're in quite a busy cafe in central London, so I'm going to get that one out the way first in case you hear ambulances going by. And really delighted that my guest is Belle, who is a sober coach, Belle of Tired of Thinking About Drinking fame. Thank you, Belle,
thank you for
meeting me.
We
should probably say straight from the off, I'm so lucky to be able to see you because you're quite anonymous in your work. Nobody sees your lovely face.
It's only if you know I'm in town.
Exactly.
You can hit me up.
So just tell us a little bit about your story in terms of sort of getting sober and sobriety, and what led you to doing the amazing work you do now.
Well, I was a person, probably like lots of people, who drank more than I wanted to, but didn't call myself a drinking problem. I just drank more than I wanted. And I thought, you know, it should be no problem to drink less. That should be easy. And it turned out to be a lot harder than I thought. And so I tried a couple times to, like, skip days or skip a week or skip a month. And then I read about something called Dry July, which is an Australian fundraiser. And I thought, okay, well, July 1st.
Yeah, in the UK, it's Dry January.
Exactly. So I thought, okay, well, surely if I don't actually have a problem, I can quit for a month. And by about day 9, I realized that it was way harder than I thought it was. And so I went online and I found that there were other people doing the same thing, because when you don't think you have a problem, you don't look at what some of the traditional supports might be, like going to an AA meeting, which is really all we know about in terms of the media or television. Really all we know is AA. So I didn't know there was anything online. I found other people doing the same thing. And then I started to write a blog myself to help myself.
And I know that you then started taking pen pals. Tell
right.
us how that came about.
Well, I was doing my blogging and saving my own skin. And when I got to my 30 days, which was the original intent, I realized it was way harder to quit than I had thought it was. And so once I got to 30 days, I thought, I'll go a little bit further, because it was really hard to get here, so I'll keep going. So I didn't do any of this. None of this is done intentionally. It's all just sort of by accident. So I usually say that I got sober by accident. By about 8.5 months, there was some other woman blogging somewhere in the world. I think she was even in New Zealand. I don't even remember. Who was having a hard time getting going. And so I said to her, and I was 8.5 months sober, but I was just regular blogger, sober blogger. And I just said to this one woman, you know, if you're having a hard time, instead of trying to quit forever, why don't you think about it as an experiment and a trial and just quit for 100 days?
Yeah.
And send me an email every couple days and just tell me how you are. Well, that sounds innocent enough until she posts it on her blog and says, I'm doing Belle's 100-day challenge. And then 3 more people email me within 24 hours saying, can I do the challenge? And I'm like, well, sure. But I'm like nobody. And then there was more in there, and then there was more. And when I got to like 30 or 40 people, I thought, well, surely there's not more than 100 people in the world who want a sober pen pal to help them do this thing that we don't even really talk about as a problem. And now it's 5 years later since I started that, and I've worked individually one-on-one with 2,800 people.
Wow. That's amazing. And obviously what people love about you is what we said at the beginning, in the sense that you are anonymous, in inverted commas. You know, we don't know a lot about you. But you're there as support for people who are probably also anonymous.
Right.
Because one of the interesting things about deciding to quit drinking is that there's, bizarrely, some kind of shame attached to it that
right.
we all feel.
Yeah.
If we give up smoking, everyone goes, yay, good on you.
Right.
You give up drinking, people say, oh, is there something wrong with you?
Right.
So is that, have you found that that's a big part of it, the anonymity?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, I have a pilot. I have a psychiatrist. I have a criminal lawyer. I have somebody who works for the music industry in Hollywood as my pen pals. I have single mom with multiple health issues who's using me in addition to 4 other supports. I have 29-year-olds and I have 79-year-olds. Male and female.
What is it that they all have in common then? I know that they
drink more than they want to.
They drink more than they want to.
Period.
Why do they need, what is it that you can offer? Is it encouragement? Is it inspiration? Is it just the reminders?
That's a good question. when you are a person who drinks more than you want to, you have a voice in your head that thinks that drinking's a good idea.
Ah, yes, and you call it Wolfie.
I call it Wolfie. And that voice talks to you and says, you should drink now. Well, it's been long enough, you could probably order a second one. Better keep track of how much there is in the house in case you run out. Mm. And that kind of voice is difficult to explain to somebody who doesn't have it. And if it's just you alone in your head, that voice is very convincing and sounds rational. And from what I've found is that we do way better when we talk to somebody else who has the same voice, because then you don't feel alone and you don't feel so crazy. But that you need some help with the reframing of, when I hear this, what does it mean? And do I have to listen to it? And I'm not talking about hearing voices like a schizophrenic or something you see on television. I'm talking about a compulsion that makes it seem like drinking is a good idea, even when you know you don't want to. And lots of people have had this experience where they have one drink and then they think, I'm only going to have one drink. But then they order a second one. Because, you know, once you've had one, it's just really easy to have two. And once you've had two, it's when everybody's having fun, inverted commas, and sitting around, it's really easy to have four.
Yeah.
And it's what I found, rather than trying to figure out, should I have one, should I have two, should I have four, is that it's actually easier to have none when you have a voice that runs around in there saying, more is better.
Does everyone have that voice? Because it's interesting, isn't it? We all know people who are moderate drinkers. I think the expression is normies, who can have one drink or two drinks and then not drink for however many days or whatever it is. So are there normies? Do they really exist?
Well, sure, but if you think about it, like, are there people who don't obsess about eating corn on the cob? You know what corn on the cob is?
Yeah, but the difference is corn on the cob isn't addictive, is it? Whereas
no,
alcohol is.
But imagine that you have a head that thinks that you need to leave the house at 11 o'clock at night to go get corn on the cob. There are people who are like that about alcohol, where they can have one or none.
Yeah.
They can finish the glass or not.
Yeah.
They're not counting how many they had. They don't. Now, how many people is that in the world? The truth is that most people are not trying to figure out how they can drink less. Most people are trying to figure out what's the maximum they can drink in any situation.
Yeah.
So even a normal drinker, in quotes, on a Monday night would have a rule and say, I don't drink more than two on Mondays, or I don't drink more than one when I have to drive. They're not trying to figure out how to have the least amount. They're trying to figure out how they can get in the most whatever what their hard limit is. So how many people are actually walking around trying to figure out how to do it with none? Not that many.
Yeah. So in other words, the alcohol, in a sense, is still controlling them. In a sense.
Well, you're still trying to figure out how to have some.
Which is why I love your title, Tired of Thinking About Drinking.
Right.
Because that's exactly it, isn't it?
Right. Because somebody asked me in an interview when I was in Australia, I did a radio show, and somebody said to me, why isn't it called Tired of Drinking? Why is it called Tired of Thinking About Drinking? And I'm like, well, there's two answers. One is I'm a Canadian, and that's the lyrics to a very famous Canadian song that every Canadian knows doesn't help the rest of the world. So I didn't make it up. The second thing is that for me, this is me personally, the hardest part of quitting drinking was the thinking about it. And the thing that occupied me the most was the thinking about it. Should I have some? Should I have none? Should I have one? Should I have more? Should I have less? Is there enough? And that kind of thinking is fatiguing. And what's surprising is that once you give it up for 30, 60, 90 days, that voice that asks for, where's the alcohol? Shouldn't I have some now? Everybody else is having some. When that voice actually stops, it's shocking how much your life improves.
Mm. But you also talk in your podcasts and in your work about the booze elevator. I think that's your expression. Tell us what you mean about that.
Well, I thought that I was only going to work with people who were like me, drank more than they wanted to. And I created content, like I made podcasts or I wrote or I talked about drinking, thinking about drinking more than you want to. What I didn't realize is that there would be anybody in the world who would be helped by the idea of having a sober pen pal and support and accountability who were drinking two bottles of wine a night, not two glasses. I didn't know. I didn't think that. What I found out after working with 2,800 people is that the voice in your head is the same, whether you drink two glasses or two bottles. I didn't know that. The problem with two bottles, of course, is that you can go to a bottom place faster. And I have said that alcohol is an elevator that only goes down, which means some people start drinking a couple of drinks a night, and then they're drinking three drinks a night, and then they're drinking more often, and then they're looking for weekends. I mean, if you think about vacations, most people start drinking at noon because they can get away with it. They're not trying to figure out what's the least I can drink. They're trying to figure out what's the most. Well, if you add that to a kind of compulsive head that's asking for it, then drinking in the morning just seems logical because it helps deal with the withdrawal and the shakes and the feeling shitty. Yeah. Probably not allowed to swear. You're going to cut that out. It helps to deal with the feeling not great. So, but if you go online and you look up a questionnaire, it says, do you drink in the morning? No. Oh, then I don't have a problem. Yeah. Right? And so what I didn't realize was that there was any elevator at all. And I didn't realize that people could be helped by the same kinds of strategies no matter where they were on this elevator. But that for some people, literally, it will become a really crisis, difficult, traumatic situation.
Yeah.
But that even if you're a person who drinks two glasses of wine a night, it's very hard to quit.
Yeah.
And that's the part that surprised me.
Yeah. And so what about people who do quite a long time sober, and then suddenly find themselves having a relapse, almost because they've got to the stage where they think, well, obviously I've got that one now. I've got that sorted, so now it must be okay for me to have one drink.
Right.
Do you come across those people?
I do, although it's not suddenly.
Ah.
You don't just suddenly find yourself.
Relapse.
Yeah, you don't trip, fall, and have a drink. Yeah. Right. There's a whole period of time beforehand where you stop doing the self-care things that helped you to be sober.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like putting gas in a car.
Yeah.
That you can drive a car with gas in it, but that eventually you have to put more gas in it. And if we have a head that defaults to thinking that drinking's a good idea, then we need to do some minimal amount of maintenance. And it's relatively minimal once you get going to maintain that. Mm. Lots of people, once they get going, think, I don't need to maintain it. But it's like maintaining a diet once you've had a large weight loss. Mm. Or it's like maintaining any other kind of addiction or mental health issue. Like if you were a person who suffered from traumatic depression, you'd be very aware of your mood if it got below a certain number. You'd be thinking, okay, I don't want to go back to that place. With drinking, though, our head convinces us that it's fine, and that's part of the problem. So people drift sometimes without even realizing it because they stop doing the things that were helping them. Checking in with a coach or a pen pal or an online forum or a friend or a meeting or a sponsor or a therapist. Mm. Just a little grain that goes in there that can remind you what you're doing and why.
Mm. Now, in addition to the podcasts and the sober pen pal stuff and the coaching, you also very uniquely offer kooky little products. And it's so cool that you do that. And actually, in this
kooky
day and age...
That's the first time somebody said it was kooky.
But, you know, when I saw these, I thought, that is so cool, because most of us don't get anything through the door anymore. We don't really get anything
in the
mail,
you mean.
We don't
really
get anything in the mail.
Right.
You know, we get everything on email. So, actually, the little things you offer, and please describe whatever you're selling at the moment. I mean, it's not rocket science to see that you're not making big bucks out of this. Clearly, this is your absolute passion. But you're bothering to craft these products somehow and physically package them up and walk to the post office. What's the thinking behind that?
It's another way of reaching people. I mean, not everybody's online. Some people don't want audio, so I transcribe the audios.
Right.
Some people want to read something physically and hold it in their hands, so I have a book, but it's available as a Kindle or as a paperback.
Yeah. But you've also got bracelets.
I do have bracelets. But, I mean, that's because I made one for myself, shared a photo, and then someone said, can I have one?
Yeah.
And so then I thought I'd only have one. I never thought I'd have more than one. I never thought I'd have one that was both brass and silver. I mean, I made a brass one. It was inexpensive. People are like, can you make a sterling
and
silver
one? What does it say
on it? Well, there's one that says, stay here, which is as opposed to running off madly in all directions and being anxious and worrying about Christmas or Thanksgiving or tomorrow.
Yeah.
If you follow the blog, there's a bunch of phrases like that, including one to do with Wolfie, which I mentioned before, which is that voice that talks to you. It's very powerful to wear a bracelet that has a message on the inside that no one else can see except you. Mm. And it's sort of like a, Wonder Woman superpower bracelet. Most recently, I've been sending out paintings done by my husband, which is very interesting because it's a tangible, visible reminder to exit the booze elevator because they're exit paintings. And we've mailed them to Singapore, Dubai, Australia, Canada, UK, 250 of them at the time of this recording. I don't know what it will be by the time you're listening to this.
Amazing.
And you think, oh, well, who wants a painting from some anonymous girl's husband? Right? Except that he's part of this because he's also sober. And he supports me. And he's an artist. So it's like a perfect thing. But when you start something like that, you think, well, who wants a painting? I'll put up one, but no one will want one. I'll offer to mail a newsletter, but then you got to give me your address.
Yeah.
No one's going to do that. And then 1,000 people do.
Yeah.
So lots of things are just experimentation. And then I'm surprised at how much it actually means to somebody. Like, my initial intent is to share something. But what happens is that they get something in the mail that's tangible from somebody who cares.
Yeah.
That turns out to be worth more than the card that I'm mailing.
Yeah, yeah. So what's for the future then? Where do you see this going? I mean, I know that you're absolutely doing this from your heart. You know, you're doing it because you want to do it. And you're making a massive difference. How will it grow? How will you, if you scale it up, as it were? Because there's only one of you, and you can't keep going to the post office, can you?
I have a unique business model, though. If you look around online, there's something called a freemium model, which is what Facebook is, which is 80% of it is free and 20% is paid.
Mm.
And that is my business model. So I do tons and tons of free things, which means I can reach tens of thousands of people for free and easy. Like, I can share an audio and then 10,000 people can access it. The one-on-one thing is a smaller number, but it's about 20%.
Yeah.
And that supports all of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, in terms of scalability, as long as it stays in the free part, I can do tons more. Like, if you have a podcast that's listened to by 1,000 people or 100,000 people, it's not more work to you.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who are touched by an audio like that.
Yeah.
If it comes to physically mailing things, there's probably some limit, but I could also have an assistant help me.
Yeah.
Because I think that getting it in the mail, signed on the back with the little French stamps, because I live in Paris, which is even weirder, that there's something about that is more than just the bracelet or just the painting.
Yeah.
So I imagine I would still do an amount of that. Even if I had 300,000 people following me, I would still do 300.
Yeah.
Specially curated, hand-done things.
Yeah.
I think one-on-one is important.
Yeah. And so, just finally then, what is there a message that you'd like to share? Maybe somebody's listening who's right at the beginning of their journey. Is there anything you'd like to say?
You're not alone. And the voice that you hear in your head is real, and it's very difficult to explain it to someone who doesn't hear it, like your spouse.
Yeah.
Or your best friend or your drinking buddy isn't going to get it. And if you do a tiny bit of research about online supports, you'll find out that there's a ton of people who are exactly the same, but we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
So I think the feeling of not being alone is really large and helpful. So if I could give a message to somebody, it would be to just go to Google and type in "tired of thinking about drinking," which will give you my site, but also lots of other people saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And then you might discover that you're not the only one with a complex mental health issue and an alcohol issue. You're not the only one with depression and an alcohol issue. You're not the only one who's got a transgender child and you have an alcohol issue. You're not the only one.
And you've got a challenge. People can do your challenge, can they?
It's a 100-day sober challenge.
Yeah.
You can do it on the blog for free. You just put your start date in.
Right.
And you can access all of the things that I do for free. Or you can contribute to the 20% that's paid, but it's not required.
Mm-hmm. Belle, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been really lovely.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So thank you to Belle. You can follow her on Instagram, Tired of Thinking About Drinking. And don't forget, I'm still doing the Stay Dry Till July campaign with the charity My Yard. We're still asking for your self-care tips. It was lovely to hear from a listener this week who said, I walk my dogs along the coastline listening to your podcast. It's helped me make the decision to give up drinking. And that means a huge amount to me. Thank you. And yes, that absolutely is a fantastic self-care tip. If you can walk along the coastline, I wish. Sadly, I don't live close enough. Now, if you want to sample some great alcohol-free drinks, we do have this competition still running over on my website, my Holistic Living website, imperfectlynatural.com. And there is a case of Outbox drinks to be won and some Sea Arch, which is a lovely alternative to gin, alcohol-free. So go on there and check out those competitions. It'd be great to have someone win those competitions who actually really wants the prize. And talking drinks, we're hoping that we'll have some kombucha to taste at our event. Just to mention that again, it is free, but you do need to grab your ticket via Eventbrite so that we know how many people are coming. Type in My Yard, or you can type in the title of the event, which is Self-Care for the Sober Curious. And as I said, we have a previous podcast guest, Laura Willoughby, who is incredibly knowledgeable about all things sobriety and mindful drinking. So we're going to have an extended Q&A on the night. So bring your questions, big or small. Laura, of course, is the co-founder of the online community Club Soda and also the Mindful Drinking Festival. And as I say, she was a guest on my, well, very first podcast, actually, my first proper podcast. So hopefully I'm going to get to meet some of you. It's the 29th of April. It is a Monday. I know that's a drag, but that's when we've got the venue. So, you know, it's all been organised by this charity. And it's very, very informal. We've got vegan nibbles. We've got alcohol-free drinks. Now, on to my self-care tip this week. You know, drum roll for this one. It is drink more water. Wow, the girl's a genius. How did I come up with that? Actually, I told a friend just a couple of weeks ago that my skin felt kind of drier than normal. And she said, are you drinking enough water? I mean, you know, this is me here, you know, queen of natural living. And then I kind of realised, hold on, since I gave up drinking, I do drink a lot less water. It used to be a case of drink one, water one. So I always had a glass of water with my wine, you know, and I had lots of water. I used to drink water before I went to bed, so I didn't wake up feeling terrible. And I used to drink lots in the morning, you know, all the stuff you do to try and relieve the effects of alcohol. But now I'm not drinking the alcohol, I forget to drink the water. So I don't drink as much as I used to, even though, of course, I do drink coffee. So maybe that's the next thing I have to crack. But anyway, it just made me realise, you know, that if someone like me, who's kind of really conscious of it, can forget to drink enough water, then it's possible that others might as well. So, yeah, that's the self-care tip. That's an easy one for you. I had a lovely factoid, actually, on the radio this week, that the water we drink is 3.5 billion years old. Oh, yeah. I'll drink to that then. Coming up in the next few weeks on the podcast, I've got an interview lined up with Kitty Waters on doing your Dharma, on finding your purpose. We've got a chat with Scott, the boy who drank too much, and Joe DeRosa from Quantum Sobriety. So follow me on Instagram, use the hashtag Stay Dry Till July. My name, as you know, on there, just at Genuinely Grace, same on Facebook. Share your best self-care tips with us, big or small, and we'd love to hear your stories. I love getting feedback. Really makes it all worthwhile. You can always email me, janie@genuinelygrace.com. And in fact, we've got a really cool PDF of resources that we're giving out to people who came to our event, because we realised we're talking about all kinds of things, and then in passing we mention a book or we mention a programme or something that's really helpful, and lots of people said, actually I didn't get to write it all down. So we've just put some of that stuff together in a PDF, and if you want a copy, you're very welcome. Just leave your email address on the DM on Instagram or on Facebook, or drop me an email, janie@janieleegrace.com, and we'll send that out to you. So that's it. I will see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Janie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.